Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 10, Episode 2, titled We Are the End of the World. This is the Whisperer Hour. This is a backstory for the Whisperers, backstory for Alpha, backstory for Beta, primarily. What'd you think of this episode, Aaron?
You know, we talked about this a little bit in the pre-podcast. I think I liked it more than you because... I mean, this is a wild, wacky episode. Like, this is like, I think you can interpret this as asking for empathy for these characters, but I think it's actually just a fleshing out of the antithesis of, and I feel almost stupid thinking The Walking Dead is capable of pulling some of this stuff off, but like, I kind of like what they're doing. They're building, you know, Alpha into the big antagonist and Carol is in the hero, and they're squaring off, and it looks like they're going to be squaring off in large part over their surrogate daughters, yep. You know, Lydia and Gamma. And that stuff is really interesting and archetypal. And I also think it's a really interesting look into like cult mentality and like what a cult would look like without laws to restrain them. You know, like if there was no one to be like, hey, you can't like murder and rape people in a society, like if you just grew up in some kind of like lawless state. It's like I think of like the Jim Jones cult, you know, like it's kind of like a somewhat millennial Christian cult. They go to South America and then people start dying. Multiple wives are happening. Kool-Aid gets dispensed. Like, I think that's super interesting. And we've only seen like a nakedly ridiculous form of it in the Garbage People, but we never got like how why did the Jadia or whatever her name is, why did she end up like this, Jadis? And with Samantha Morton, who is way better than she needs to be in this role, and like answering this question is like it's broken people, right? Like you get broken people that have given up because of their life circumstances. And that's when you're ripe for a cult, you know, to come in and like when nothing makes sense and everything, nothing matters. If someone can step forward and saying, no, this one thing matters. And look at me. I don't suffer from your problems because of this one thing. You latch on it like a drowning person.
Sure.
You know, so I just think that's interesting.
It is. Yeah. I don't know if they're. So there are a couple things that this is doing that they have to do. One of them is setting up the idea that Lydia, you know, is not the furthest thing from Alpha's mind. In fact, it's very much on her mind and she's, you know, driven to go back probably to try and either try and deal with that problem one way or another, whether it's killing Lydia. Probably not. It's probably bringing her back into the fold because she cares about her, which she's not supposed to. You know, it's sort of like saying, well, all of this bullshit that she tells everybody else doesn't apply to herself, which I think is also a trend among cult leaders.
Yeah, high control groups. Rules for thee, but not for me.
For sure. And so, like, I don't know. I guess I respect what this episode is doing because it needs to be done. And because it does, you know, make a certain amount of sense, given the wacky scenario of... the dead are coming back to life, right? What all bets are off at that point. But like in as much as it was trying to make me sympathize with Alpha or Beta or any of these people, like that's the parts where I'm like, eh, you're not really going to get me on that. I've seen enough to know that you don't have to be a psychotic who goes around killing people and leaving babies for dead in order to survive in this world. Yeah, I've seen too much of the better part of this world to really sympathize too much, even though I get the idea that like, well, these are very, very broken people. It's just, you know, if they're turning to methods that are maybe not the ones I would turn to. Sure, I get that.
Well, that's trademark of like a high control extremist group. They say that this is the only way to live. And if they ever see evidence that like another way is successful, tear it down because that's a threat to the existence of the other group. Right. Like, because, you know, we can't have, we're too extreme to acknowledge that there's lots of different roads that people can walk. Like I said, and there's a lot of like really interesting casting. For example, we talked about this before. I was stunned as I was taking my introductory notes during the credit sequence to see the name Thora Birch. I'm like, Did I read that? I rewound it. Thora Birch from American Beauty. Thora Birch, Ghost World. Thora Birch. Thora Birch is shambling around The Walking Dead somewhere, and she's Gamma in this episode.
Yeah.
When I think it's really interesting that I'm, and I might be reading too much into this, but like I feel like she was cast because she's almost the splitting image of if you took Samantha Morton and Melissa McBride, and like you cast them as both of their daughters.
Okay.
Like that's. And I think that's like really going, I hope that that's what it becomes, like this twist, like, you know, you're telling the story of these two groups through the lens of like these two women and these two daughters. I think it'd be really interesting, and it's really great casting. And actually, yeah, getting Thora Birch on a fucking show like this, what a feather in your cap. So
I was shocked when you told me that. I'm like, there's no possible way that's Thora Birch. And then I went and I looked at like IMDb and some recent pictures of her. It turns out I literally haven't seen her act in anything in 20 years, so I had no idea what she looked like.
Yeah, yeah.
That's wild. You don't bring a caliber of actor onto this show like that only to write them off in a single episode, so I think she'll be around for a while, probably as long as, the Whisperers are.
This alpha beta gamma stuff is I think super super interesting, and you're right, like, you know, and that's why I'm saying, like, actors of these caliber, like, I don't know, I feel like I'm trying to get over like underestimating The Walking Dead, but
right,
there's stuff in this episode that is still like straight from the classic Walking Dead, and maybe that's where, like, you know, they're finding their Z Nation zone, like Z Nation sensibilities, but with like the inter-character motivations and interactions of like a prestige drama. That's something I could get down for sure.
Yeah, I was feeling vibes of like the Governor arc, right, where we go off with him for three episodes and don't return, and how we talked so often about how this show has a problem cordoning off its episodes into single character POVs or single groups POVs. And so when I noticed, like, I'm halfway through this episode and we haven't seen a single damn one of our survivors, I'm like, uh-oh, are they going to do something like this? I think this episode is much better than what they pulled out with the Governor arc. But I still feel those waves of like, oh, shit, it's Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Don't get too comfortable here. I have some post-traumatic stress from watching seasons of this show.
You need your stuffy. You're not ready to give it up yet.
No.
You need your weird vine bed four poster that they come home to. Yeah, no, I definitely feel that. But even then, it's like, yeah, old Walking Dead would have blown this into a three. Also, like, the Governor wasn't as interesting and compelling nor mysterious as Alpha at this point.
For sure. Yeah.
You know, like. I just feel like that. Yeah, I was ready for. I didn't find me noticing that there was a lack of Alexandria at all. In fact, I was just like, oh, this is kind of an interesting story. And then when they brought it back to like the fire in the sky and the stare down between, you know, the pretty almost like accidental Renaissance standoff between her and Carol, like, yeah, this is going to be good. Like, fucking Carol's not getting back on that boat, Jim.
Yeah,
she's found a new purpose, and it's destroying this woman. And vice versa, man, that's going to be compelling. That's going to be cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm super excited to see them square off. Why don't we take a quick break and then we'll come back and get into the recap.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
This Tuesday, we're back off the clock with a new premium podcast covering our experiences with the new Amazon series Fallout, Alex Garland's Civil War, as well as some thoughts on X-Men 97.
Then on Friday, The Old Reliable, Lunch with Jim and Aaron. Join us in the Munch crowd to watch us record live at 1 p.m. Eastern, or check out the podcast later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds. We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for podcasts that really spoke to them or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcasts, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
All right, we're back. We started off 7 years ago with a car crash. And it's some nobody. I thought we were going to go back and like be introduced to a new group of survivors and we're going to have this whole thing, but she gets eaten immediately. And then we see Lydia and Alpha who, are just trying to survive at that point. And it's further along than it was the first time we saw Lydia and Alpha, down in the basement last season. So we get an idea of like how much time really has passed here, right? It has to have been like, we're now looking at over 10 years of the apocalypse, based on how young Lydia was in those other scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And they get chased by walkers because Lydia freaks out and screams, and they get chased into a building, an asylum, actually, where Beta is staying. And he says, okay, you can stay overnight. These early scenes are going to be really hard to recap because they cut back and forth so frequently between the 7 years ago timeline and the today timeline. So, yeah. You know, bear with me on this stuff, but we'll get through it.
Can we stop here and talk about the action so far? Because I thought that I had this thought that when we opened up with the lady with her head on the horn, it's like, oh, this is the era of Survivors where like Lori did a barrel roll off the road. Mm-hmm. Like, at this point, you're pretty dyed-in-the-wool survivor, but you still got a couple people who just aren't going to cut it. Aren't going to be able to make it. And they're going to somehow pell-mell drive through a herd of zombies and get themselves. Also, it's funny because it's been a minute since we've seen someone eaten alive screaming, right? Like, this is also kind of a throwback to earlier phases where you had less experienced survivors just getting torn apart helplessly. And this lady died about as hard as anyone I've seen on this show. Like, the nose biting, like ripping off, horrific.
Yeah, there are two of those this episode. The other sister gets ripped apart too.
Two quality getting eaten alive screaming scenes. Which has been a while. And going back in kind of like time, I thought was a good way to handle that. Plus, it's in service of like terrifying Lydia. Like, yeah. You know, the futility of trying to get a child to grow up and to be tough enough that like this isn't going to affect them.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's yeah, you get started on a crazy, crazy real early. But yeah, I like this. It's funny when they got into the hospital and they're like, Mama, there's a man, and they cut to Beta. And I'm like, yeah, that is true. That is a man standing. Here in the hallway,
he's standing in a very like Jason Voorhees pose, right? Like
he really is,
like
yeah,
slasher pose. Which is, I feel like really apt for that character because he is that kind of guy. And a lot of the stuff he's saying later in the episode gives me Jason vibes, gives me Mike Myers sort of vibes. you know, that deranged sense of like, this is where I belong in the world. it feels like that character is straight out of a slasher movie.
Yeah.
Also, we come to understand throughout the episode, I think, but initially it was pretty obvious what they were doing when he shows up and he's got this hood on, or bandages or something. I can't really tell what he was wearing. And you can tell that, like, okay, this is sort of the genesis of the skin masks that the Whisperers wear, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Which culminated the way that ended, I thought was pretty cool. But like,
yeah.
They don't really, the show doesn't, and I kind of am glad, because I feel like Walking Dead season 7, there would be a 10-minute scene of him like, the reason I scratch the faces out of these photos is because I can't deal with looking at my own. You know, like, they'd just be like, we don't need that. Like, all we need is Samantha Morton to stumble into this trophy case that has these guys' faces scratched out. And then we need to see the guy with the distinctive T-shirt later on as a zombie. They can't, like, it's, yeah, like, show don't tell, you know?
For sure. Yeah, it worked. So we're back in the present day, and Alpha sends Beta out on a mission to collect some more walkers. Their best trackers, known as the Sisters, go with him. And stop me if you want to talk about any of this, but Beta, he growls. They go into this parking garage and he growls and he gathers some walkers, which I really loved. I thought it was cool to see him, like, I can't tell if he's communicating with the walkers or if he's just like doing such a convincing walker that they follow him when he makes
a noise. It's
like
some Duck Dynasty shit, right? He's just doing an expert, like, it's the perfect thing to gather a zombie's attention.
Yeah.
And get them moving in a direction and free them with the door without them catching on that you're a human.
Yeah.
Like, it's
the way
skill.
He sort of just drags his hand over as he walks by. Yeah. Feels like what a walker would do.
Yeah, and then like palms the latch and unlatches it as he's staggering past. Like it without knowing what it looks like to be skillful at corralling a herd of zombies, I feel like this show is doing a very good job of making me feel like, oh yeah, that was a smooth operator right there at the zombie parking garage.
Yeah.
Did you get the idea from these sisters that like there was almost something supernatural about the blonde? You know, or was like,
staring at the sun and stuff.
Well, but she also like, I don't know, because I got this thing where, because Alpha said, take the sisters with you. They have a scent for the dead. And I couldn't like, I'm debating even now. Did she send them out there with Beta to test Gamma and the sisters like resolve? Or did these sisters actually have a knack for finding the dead? Because it seems like they did. She's like head in her clouds, but like, you got to focus. And she's like, oh, I can tell they're over there. I can sense. She said something. And I'm like, are we going to go into like some weird psychic phenomenon type of things in the final years of The Walking Dead?
Maybe they've all had COVID and lost their sense of smell, because I would think anybody would be able to tell where a walker is.
Oh, but you wouldn't if you're wearing guts all the time, right? Like,
oh,
maybe
that's
the thing. She's got the extra, just a little 10% more keen that she can still detect the genuine rot from the artificial.
From her own scent. Yeah.
That would make sense. Yeah. Like, you have got like a little bit of a human bloodhound, because you just can't. You're surrounded in death. How the hell do you smell a pack of dead?
I mean, any door that's closed, you open it and there are bound to be walkers behind it, right?
Probably.
In a
it
city.
Seems like that's what I've been. Yeah, I've definitely been taught. But maybe we are underestimating how hard it is to get to find like mobile walkers nowadays, like this, you know, 10 years into the apocalypse.
You know, like healthy, I don't know. Strong they haven't guardians. Shown me that, right? Like, they've shown me water walkers with no legs being able to stand up, you know, no meat on their legs, standing up and walking toward. So
that's true.
They can't have it both ways. But
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think they just have some knack. Like, Daryl is an expert tracker, right? So they're just the dead equivalent of that. One of these sisters is acting very erratically. She's entranced by the sun, and then she starts crying and attracts the attention of some of the walkers in the group they're in, almost gets all of them killed, and Beta is going to kill her back at camp, but Alpha says no, instead bring her to the deeper place, and we'll find out what that is.
I do like this about the cult stuff. It's like highly specific terminology that makes sense to the in group, but like, we're just like, the fuck is the deep place?
Yep.
But I also really liked the hand signals, like the I like the whisper culture. I don't like it, but I like getting to like they have like this hand sign language kind of like zombie special forces hand the communicate silently, and the way they whisper at each other. And it's also a nice touch to like deal with the horrific thing from last, because like they tell you that this sister, the youngest sister, I'm going to call her, based on nothing, is the one that had to give up her baby to the zombie horde last year.
Yeah, the one that the baby they abandoned outside of the hilltop. But they don't, they tell you that, but not with words, right? They just like show a flashback of the baby and you go, oh, okay, connect the dots.
And then Samantha talks a mess about how you can't possibly know how hard it is to give up your child. And also I'd forgotten that Samantha, the resolution of last season arc is that Samantha told the crew that she killed her daughter.
Yeah.
And didn't really.
Same here.
So like, yeah, I started to get that idea and I'm like, oh, this is interesting. So it's good that they kind of reinforced that in people's minds. I went ahead and looked it up to make sure. But yeah.
And you start
and then
to
by
get
the end of the episode.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. You get everything. And they breadcrumb that out pretty nicely here. That's why I say like the structure of this episode is maybe the best part of this episode, with the sort of bookended quick cuts between flashbacks and sort of the longer, you know, story based stuff in the middle. They start to breadcrumb that out pretty early on, where, you know, Alpha is telling Beta in these flashback, like, this is my daughter. I will not leave this earth without her. Like, if you're going to kill us, or if you're going to kill me, you have to kill her first, because I'm not going to die before she is, like, all that stuff. Right. And you get the idea. They've also mentioned like Alpha has a mission and we don't really know what it is at this point, but she's telling Beta like the mission, blah, blah, blah. It seems clear at that point that they're hinting at it being to go back for Lydia somehow, or to make, you know, the people who took Lydia pay, something like that.
Yeah. Even and like, I always find it's also moving, because you can tell there's some people in the pack that are not committed, you know, and they even have a word for it, uncommitted. Every one of these groups has, you know, Scientologists call them suppressive people. Jehovah's Witnesses call them apostates.
Sure.
You know, there's always a word to like the people that were part of your group and are now outside of your group. They're like to have the special scorn because they saw the divine light and have turned from the darkness, you know, turned back
towards
the darkness.
They made the conscious decision not to follow.
Yeah, and there's like some sad shit in the margins. Like, there's this one lady that reaches out to the sister and is like, you know, like, I've been thinking about that. And those people that had livestock, and we could like probably going to be found, you know, dying screaming in an episode or two from now. But like, there's people in here that like, and that they deal with that in the episode. Like, these people have seen Eden. How are we going to convince them it's hell? Well, we're going to make it hell. We're going to show that this can't, you know, that this world can't survive, or you can't have this fantasy life in this nightmare scenario, which I, again, like, these people kind of came by these beliefs honestly, you know, their blend of like trauma and abuse, and like what there are no wrong answers in a world where the dead is 99% of the walking, right. So I just thought that stuff is really cool.
So Lydia tries to back in the, you know, 7 years ago flashback, tries to spontaneously grow up and be like her mother, but she gets no love at all. Then we go back to this deeper place that we were talking about, where the eldest sister, let's say, meets with Alpha, and disappointingly it's just a cave, the deeper place. I was hoping it'd be, I don't know, something better, but it's
Carcosa, cave.
Kinda, yeah. Sort of
walk the bride's path, little sister.
Yeah, I mean, she constructed a whole shrine for Lydia. The least she could do for this deeper place is decorate the entrance. I don't know, something.
Yeah, can we get some skulls? You know, like some macabre macrame with bones and skin and flesh. You got a lot to work with here. You got a lot of raw, frightening materials. You got a place called the Deeper Place. I think it needs a little interior decoration. Alpha,
for sure.
Don't want to question your authority on these matters, but
she squeezes this girl's head really hard or something. I don't know, she screams when she grabs her head, so
Yeah, I thought she's going to pull a Blade Runner and just like, am I like, wait, she's not a robot. Like, I don't think you can, I don't think she can crush this woman's skull, or she's going to pull like a,
yeah,
like Commodus and Gladiator, where like, she squeezes her face to her belly until they suffocate or whatever. But no, nah,
I kept waiting for it. I kept waiting for the turn when it's going to get violent, and it just didn't.
It's love bombing. It's the other tactic the cults use, you know, sometimes yeah. The carrot and stick.
Trying to cement, you know, her future loyalty by showing mercy, right? Showing forgiveness in this instance. And the sister returns to camp. Everyone's surprised to see that she's still alive. Beta's not very happy about it, though. She might be losing his loyalty a little bit. He think there's think that there's something wrong with Alpha, but she says, nah, I'm good.
Do you think that, so like here, I want to talk about this, the cult psychology here. Do you think that Alpha knew she had a hard corner to turn here with her group? Like at some point they're going to find out that Lydia's still alive and she made a special exception and she showed this person grace as kind of like a way to like delay some tracks towards that path. And like, it's just like, cause cults, like it almost reminds me of Mean Girls too, you know, where like when the queen bee starts losing a little bit of power and starts making exceptions for herself and the other bees get so pissed and like, no, you know, it's if you don't wear the pink sweater at the right day, then you can't sit with us. And like that's another interesting commentary on how extremist group gets more extremist. Like the person that leads it's like, fucking this and fucking that. And then they get to a situation like, well, actually, I think there should be some gray area here, brothers and sisters. And the brothers and sisters don't let them get away with it. Because like, nah, you know, when my kid needed a blood transfusion, it was all about God's will. And now you're so it's an interesting dynamic. Like, who does lead this shit?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a feedback loop in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Vicious cycle.
So then Alpha, back in the flashback, is wandering the halls of the asylum, killing walkers, and Beta joins in to help her clear as well, which is essentially what they're doing, right? They're just clearing. They're just pulling a Morgan here.
Pretty much.
Alpha begins gutting one of the kills and names herself A and names Beta B. This is sort of like, we start to understand that these are not necessarily names, but you gotta call people something. Right? Like, how am I going to refer to you? Hey, you. Hey, you. Hey, person over there. No, not you. Not the eight of you standing over there. The other you. No. God damn it. Not that you either. You got to have some label.
You got to have something. You got to have hierarchies and organizations and labels or what shit. The world stops working. But it's also first sign of like Alpha's bullshit, right?
Right.
Like she started off with like, oh, us to survive, we communicate on a primal level.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's Mrs. A and Mr. B. Like, what the fuck? I thought we could communicate on a primal level. Well, OK, maybe we need a little bit of verbal grease to make that primal level work. Like, it's just
a letter.
Yeah, it's just making shit up as she goes along.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she's trying to impart some wisdom about surviving in the new world, but she goes too far when she tries to touch Beta's mask. And he tells her to leave at sunrise and never come back.
Also, I really like the idea that they do a lot of interesting thematic stuff that I think are the hallmarks of better shows, where Samantha Morton's humming I Go Walking After Midnight this whole episode, and Beta has a problem with her walking after midnight, both in the hospital and in modern days, because it turns out she's been doing arts and crafts, forbidden arts and crafts, building a shrine for his daughter. It's nice. You know, they don't really draw attention to it. It's just a nice little detail.
Sure. Also thematically, maybe. I mean, she's named Alpha, he's named Beta, but really they're named A and B. We've seen this show littered with A's and B's.
I thought the same thing.
Is there any fucking connection between these A's and B's and the other A's and B's, or the Rick's A's and B's, Jadis's A's and B's, the Terminus A's and B's? Dude,
I'm not going to expect it, but I will say if they can find some kind of unifying A-B theory out of this, that would kind of be mind-blowing. Like, I'm not going to expect it, because that's like I'm saddling Kang
stuff,
with,
right?
Yeah, like with almost a decade of bullshit lore that doesn't make sense. But like every once in a while, you know, someone takes over the franchise as like an Uber fan and finds a way to like
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, here's the reason the Klingons had smooth foreheads and then got wrinkly bump heads. What do you think of that shit? And the fan's like, yeah, sounds pretty good. Or like, this is what happened. You thought Boba Fett got eaten, but he didn't. Like, there, it's like, yeah, every once in a while, like, maybe Kang and the crew are those people that, like, fucking love The Walking Dead and love the lore and can find a way to smooth over all those inconsistencies. Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. A's and B's sounds like a bunch of BS to me. another thing that sounds like BS is this idea that she espouses about, you know, there being two kinds of people in the world, and she defines it as such, those brave enough to walk with the dead and everybody else, which, I mean, if that's your definition, if everybody else is included in your definition of only two types of people, that's literally true of anything you could say before that. Only true. Two types of people in this world, those with two arms and those without. Only two types of people in this world, those with butt chins and those without. Everybody else.
Only two types of people in the world, those currently on a toilet shitting and those are not.
Right. Right. You can divide that's the population into group, two halves. Or, you know, two... groups with that all day, but
yeah,
I don't know, it strikes beta is pretty true, I guess.
It also it's nice that, like, you can see how this thing grew over time, like what this is the genesis of the alpha beta pack mentality. She's kind of like been, you know, hobby horsing this with her daughter, but now she's got another follower, and this is where it's really like, from here you go to the deep place. You go to the non-committals, you go to the, like, I forget, they had a couple other term of arts about the pack. You got the pack, you got the gamma, and like all this almost like fetish type shit, you know, of ritual. Which again, I think is really a interesting and keen insight into like the way these things develop.
Sure. All right, let's take a quick break and be right back.
Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
All right, we're back. The sisters are talking about their experience, or, you know, the younger sister's experience with Alpha and the sacrifice that she had to make of her son. And this younger sister apologizes for risking their life with Alpha. We'll see that that doesn't turn out super great because there's an explosion in the sky. They're out, you know, gathering walkers again. There's an explosion in the sky. This sister sees a zombie with a baby carrier and she freaks out and she attacks Alpha, trying to get her killed and draw the walkers over there to kill her. The younger sister gets torn apart in the attempt and Alpha survives, unfortunately, for our survivors. Mm-hmm. Afterward, Alpha applauds the other sister for helping her to pull her out of the horde. And then Alpha's feeling very calm, which is unsettling to Beta.
There's clarity amidst the chaos, Jim.
There sure is.
I wondered about, because like I had like a serious take and a funny take on some of this stuff, The Walking Dead. Like my serious take was this woman saw the baby carrier, made her think of her baby, and she instantly remembered, like overcame the cult conditioning and just had this fury of Alpha. My funny take is she thought, God damn it, bitch, if we had just waited like another month, we'd have found this baby carrier and it wouldn't have any problems with my baby.
You just tuck the baby into the carrier and
you stuck the baby in the carrier, put a pacifier in its mouth. You know, yeah, you don't have to worry about it jostling in this hanky, you know, like we could have gotten, or I could just load the baby into the zombie carrier and let the zombie carry it around. Like,
yeah,
you know, like, oh, this is, you're too hasty. Why I gotta go walking? Why can't like, you know, we give them 2 years of maternity leave to mom so they can get their babies inducted into a cult.
Sure, like, that'll work out well. Just send them away with the baby, give them 2 years away from this psychotic cult,
and then keep them in a deep place.
Come back. I'm sure they
keep them in the deep. Oh, it's Rumspringa for the whispers.
Exactly.
I was thinking you keep them in the deep place that whole time until you get unless a kid learns like how to shut up and how not to.
So this is a little bit of my confusion here. They make it clear that they're very far away from the. You know, boundaries that they've set up with Alexandria and then the Hilltop all in. Is this like a makeshift camp that they've set up? I mean, all their camps are makeshift, right? But like, are they going back to a place where like the deep place is something that feels like a home base, like an HQ? Or do they have a deep place in every port? Is this like...
It's crazy because like, I don't know. Okay. I took it that they migrated south for the winter.
Okay.
And then they were on their way back to their home base and they got close enough. Obviously, they got close enough that they were within walking distance of the boundaries. Right.
Yeah.
But like, it's weird because I imagine you could see that fire from sky probably from hundreds of miles away. It's happening in the upper atmosphere. Yeah. So like you could see it from like across almost the whole continent. Almost. I said almost a lot. So like. But they have to be close enough to see that. But like, the thing is that I don't understand the passage of time in this episode. It could be like from the beginning to the end. Are we seeing like a day, a couple of days, a month, like a process of gathering? Because it seems like other thing is that like maybe they didn't go south for their winter. Maybe they went south to gather more zombies because they just bought time to come back and crush these survivors. Because there's no way. Clearly, there's no way these societies can live sharing borders. There's just no way.
Yeah, I mean, it makes
they're inimical to each other.
I just have a lot of questions about the logistics and what they're trying to tell me. Because, is it a makeshift camp? What happened to the massive horde of walkers that we saw in that canyon, which is clearly gone now?
Because I think we just haven't seen it yet. Like, they're not in the main group. They're in some kind of temporary location. Yeah. I think they took it with them and they're gathering more and more because she wants an overwhelming, crushing response. Like, I don't know. It seemed like that Valley of Death already was enough to pound all four of the villages, but who knows?
And the survivors certainly think it is, right? They talk about it as a nuclear option that they have no real defense against. So,
Yeah.
I don't know. I just have a lot of questions.
Eugene's cooking up a fat boy for him.
Yeah. I hope so. So we go back in a flashback where young Lydia covers herself in guts. And here's where we start to like cut back and forth quickly again, I think. She covers herself in the guts of the walkers that her mom and Beta pulled the guts out of. They're storing them in buckets. I don't know what they're doing with these guts.
I think she's getting ready to move out in the next morning. Like they have a ritual that like she washes her daughter because it stinks, and then they reapply guts in the morning. Yeah, okay. Probably do that. She's just getting the gut staged so they could take a quick gut bath.
Right. Ugh. And she heads down the hall. She's gonna go looking for something. Come back to the present. The remaining sister is given a letter. In this big ceremony, she's given the letter Gamma, which is only actually the third letter in the Greek alphabet, which means that none of these other people have letters, and this is,
I think so,
a
yeah.
huge honor then, right, in this fucked up society that they've built. Getting
yep.
getting the third letter.
And Beta, of course, is going to see it as a threat to him, because everyone's hailing Gamma except for Beta at the end. He's like, mm-hmm. this is bullshit. We don't need a Gamma. We just need an Alpha and Beta.
Yeah.
But again, like, that's the thing. It's like with this cult stuff, I'm wondering. Because, you know, Beta goes on to levy a bunch of accusations at her, like, well, you're just trying to recreate the daughter relationship that you lost. Do you mm-hmm. think it's that, or do you think this is, again, part of Beta's master plan to, like, I wouldn't even put it past a cult leader in this situation to essentially try to aim for 6 months from now, my pack will think this is actually my daughter, and there was never a Lydia. My daughter is this strong Gamma person. Yeah. Nice. She's got purity of purpose and she stands by my side. Yeah, that's literally fucking Joseph Stalin it. You know, scratch the faces out of the picture. Like, she's gone.
We've always
Lydia never existed. It's always been Gamma. Eurasia, it's always been. Or Lydia grew up and became Gamma. I sent her away to be strong and she came back to me and she's like, and right. what's the cult going to do? Say she's wrong? And you know, the new people are not going to know any better. The old people are going to go away because they've mastered the art of cognitive dissonance to survive. It's frightening shit, but that's also how this stuff works, you know?
Yeah, and I think the only guy who sees clearly is Beta, right? He knows that Alpha is damaged in the same ways that he is, right?
And similar the, like, ways, yeah. And they,
especially at the end of this episode, like, losing Lydia would be a thing that would break her, like losing his wife or whoever it was who he now wears the skin of.
I think it's his kid. I think it's his son, okay. maybe. Yeah.
And so like, if things go that way, he might be the only guy who's willing to break with this pack. And you might have a situation where she brings herself down because she loses Beta's loyalty. I don't know.
It's a tough one. Like, you know, and the other thing is like, the survivors have an advantage, which is if they can kill Alpha and or Beta, they can probably destroy this whole movement. That's not true of the other side. Like, if they kidnap Daryl or Carol or any of the people they put on and put as many heads, well, as long as there's a person, it's like, this is bullshit. I'm not submitting to this horrific. They have to fight to the last man. I don't think that's the case with the Alpha's group. Like, you murk a couple of the top leaders in that, or they just get sick and die, or they mess up. Like, that's the other thing is like, people are like, well, this is so unrealistic. I'm like, yeah, that's true. But you're seeing the 1 out of 100 times this works.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, the other 99 times Alpha got murdered by Beta because he's too crazy to pull this shit on, or her daughter screamed and they didn't have the time, that the door didn't open at the last minute, or one of the traumatized young mothers jumped on her back and she didn't get to safety. Like, this is all very, very luck based. You know, but the thing is like, that also makes their claim every time they have this miraculous survivor, the cult leader has a stronger hold on their devotees, right?
Sure.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, that's part of the shtick, man. That's how you get to a position where you can you know, you're kind of ballsy and you just go with your gut and you punish the people that don't go along, and you keep that ball of fucked up success going long enough and you can do shit like this. So, mm-hmm.
yeah, it's not an anomaly, even in our real world, that this kind of stuff happens. You don't get people to kill themselves knowingly.
And you know, here's the thing I've been thinking about a lot with knowing how kind of cults work and stuff. And like, because my mom, when she was literally the prom queen in the high school, when she was like, the, you know, like a valedictorian in her school and college, if you told her, hey, 15 years from now, lady, you're going to be in a cult. You're going to be in this Jehovah's Witness cult. She would have laughed in her face. But, you know, a couple things didn't go her way in terms of like life success and mental health. Couldn't deal with the death of her grandmother. And suddenly person came to her door offering that one thing. And I see, like, when I hear about people like all of these having the common experiences of a doom scrolling on Twitter, like you're just obsessing over all the bad things that are going on in the world. And also a lot of legit bad things going on in the world, man. I just feel like there's a whole lot of people, like, you know, there's a couple of cult movements that got a lot of the news and attention. But I feel like there's a lot of people susceptible to this right now, because of their most, you know, again, when it seems like nothing matters, then fuck, nothing matters.
And you'll take like whatever answer you can get.
It's weird, like, how resonant The Walking Dead feels, like, you know, 3 years after I kind of abandoned it because of just, you know, the way people are thinking nowadays. So, like I said, like, if you are the type of person that thinks that you are invulnerable to cult influences, you are putting yourself at super risk for having that kind of cocksure attitude. So take care of yourself. Watch after your people. Guard your mental and emotional health. And don't fucking jump on that one thing if you're feeling hopeless. So,
yeah. So she gets her letter, Gamma. Beta not super happy about it. The next day he goes to her and finds out Alpha's headed over to the old camp, and he goes off after her. And then back in the flashback, young Lydia heads upstairs, and Alpha, I think it's Alpha awakens to go after her. Lydia opens the door to a room full of walkers, goes inside. And Alpha's kind of searching around. She sees pictures with scratched out faces. And we're about to get to the part where these two things like really converge. Do you want to talk about any of this stuff?
Yeah, just, you know, again, you see the hypocrisy at the top of the cult, you know, where Gamma raises a reasonable thing. Like, you've been gone. What are you doing? Are you angry with me? I feel nothing. No, you're feeling a lot of things, dude. I saw your reaction to this midnight Gamma ceremony.
Yeah.
But no one can talk or expose weakness because weakness is you know, antithesis to the group. So, you know, like if you expose weakness, you're automatically outside of the group. So Beta can't have an honest discussion about, I don't know. I'm wondering how they're going to continue, because like these are pretty profound realizations about the dynamics of these groups, but they're also not particularly interesting. Like, cult politics is stupid. And I should know. I sat through a lot of the fucking, like, you know, elders meeting behind doors.
Yeah.
One of the things that broke my faith the fastest, man. Like, oh shit, this is how you talk when you don't think the people are listening. But like, yeah, like I hope that there's not a lot of dwelling on this, because like, yeah, they're kind of profound insights, but they're also elementary. And, you know, after a couple of sessions, it's like, ah, yeah, I don't need to see more of this. But
yeah, for sure. And it's important to establish like how they think and why they think those ways. I do think that like this is kind of a necessary episode, even if it isn't my favorite episode. And like I said, I like the structure here, and we're coming back to it now where we, in both timelines, Beta finds Alpha, and he's both at her Lydia shrine in the present, and she is at his shrine to his wife or son, I guess. I couldn't tell, the face is scratched out. So yeah, whoever this important person to him, she's at the shrine that he's made to that person. And they both get super pissed and destroy these shrines at the same time. Young Lydia, it comes in the past timeline and breaks it up. And then Alpha invites Beta to walk along with the dead with her. And we see him like peel the skin off this dead person, important person's face. And we assume, okay, well, this is the mask he's wearing, as they cut to, and I really like this transition, cut to the face of Beta wearing that skin 7 years in the future. It paints a picture of Beta that I think both makes a lot of sense, and also, you know, in the face of me being resistant to sympathizing with him, also makes me sort of sympathize with him, because
sure,
this idea that you would then, I mean, not only are you wearing the skin of your beloved family member, but you're wearing it 7 years later. And I get the impression that like if this skin were ever to come off, because I don't think we've ever seen him remove this, right? If that were to come off of his face and people were to see him for who he truly is, that would be that'd be the end of Beta.
It's like a Rorschach moment, pulling his mask off, you know. I think you're right.
And they do that in this episode, and I'm so pissed off. Like, this is Walking Dead bullshit at its height. Like, oh, they're gonna show Alpha his face, but they're not gonna show the audience. I just get angry at that point. Like, what are you hiding here? This should be the moment to open up to the audience as much as you're opening up to these other characters, and you're not doing it.
Mm. I do. There's like one other dynamic in cults that I find that I'm sorry I harp on this, but I find it relentlessly fascinating. If you didn't know, I grew up in a cult. If you want to know more about it, baldmove.com/about. It's got a lot of information. But this, they take normal things and make them abnormal, and they take abnormal things and normalize them. Like when I saw this, like, you know, 7-year cycle of like Beta in a rage and in grief, destroying his humanity, essentially, by destroying the shrine. And then Alpha doing the why Alpha looked on and approvingly. And then the inverse of that dynamic where, you know, Beta hoisted her up on her hypocrisy and she had the grief rage smash her shrine to Lydia and he looked on approvingly. Like, it's normal to love people and to miss people that are important to you and want to protect them and want them back. It's abnormal to build a shrine and then destroy it, like in like some kind of like traumatic break. But that's what they do, you know? Like, hey, if what's 95% of people do? Masturbate? That's something you can't do. Boy, you do that, you need to be on your knees every day begging for God's forgiveness. What's natural to love the sons and daughters? Oh, well, we need to excommunicate them if they don't come around on the whole masturbation idea. Mm. Like, it is
it
a way
and that's into the vast majority of people.
And the other thing, not only that, but it also weeds out the people, because you're right. Some people like it, you know, like if you're feeling strong, you feel in love, you feel like you got a community, you're probably not at risk for, you know, a cult takeover. But it also, that kind of shit weeds those people out. They self-select for the people who are in the state that they are susceptible to that by doing these things, by abnormalizing the normal and normalizing the abnormal. So like, I thought that's like, man, they just like are real, like someone's read the like fucking bite model of cults and like has got like these really interesting insights into it. Like, I wonder like if one of the staff writers is a Scientologist or something, because God damn, they really nailed this
research.
Stuff.
I mean, you
did some good. Yeah. Cracked a book.
Yeah. Definitely. I feel that built into the episode. They're doing a good job with that stuff.
Yeah.
And then the final bit here is Beta tells Alpha that in the present there was smoke by the border, and she says they're going to go back and they're going to teach him a lesson. And Beta finally seems happy about something.
Mm-hmm. And I also thought this is so interesting. They're like ethos, their chant, you know, at the end, like,
we're the end of the world.
You know, when we walk in darkness, we're free. When we bathe in blood, we're free. We love nothing. We fear nothing. Like, it sounds very almost Buddhist Jedi, right? There's like this kind of essential truth of the world that they live in and the way that they're embracing this darkness, or like embracing entropy. Because that's the other thing, is like this cult also suffers from like the Shaker problem. And if you don't know the Shakers, they were like this extremist, I think, offshoot of the Quakers that didn't believe in any sexual congress, let alone they took the masturbation thing one step forward to like there was no lawful sex for between men and women.
Well, that's just a recipe for yourself out of the history books at that point.
That's exactly what happened. Like, the Shakers went extinct because, like, if you had sex then you weren't
big
a Shaker anymore.
Surprise.
Like,
yeah.
So this is another cult that's like got this, you know, terminal problem that like you cannot raise a baby. You're eventually going to find out, like, you know, you're going to eventually run out of recruits.
Yeah.
And you're going to just die. And I guess that's what they want. Like, that's a logically consistent thing that like the dead are the real inheritors. So like, you know, I do wonder, like, I imagine there'll be a extremist offshoot of this cult. It's like, well, let's just get it over with. Stab me in the heart. Now, 5 minutes later, I'll be a zombie. You know,
yeah.
Like fast forward this shit. Why are we living like this? Why are we pretending to be zombies? We can just be zombies, man.
For sure.
I wonder if they'll ever deal with that theological problem. in their
I get the feeling they're not going to be around long enough. Like, I know how this show goes, right? New threat comes up, the survivors squash it eventually. Like, they're threatened by it at first, they lose some battles, it's the 3-act structure, all that stuff.
That's a good question. Do you like, I don't think they're going to wrap up the Whisperers in 8 episodes, do you?
No, I think it'll be like a season thing. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of agree. But but like I said, that's the thing about podcasting about this in the dark with the stuff in, like, I do wonder, it's like, well, if they dealt with the Whisperer's threat and in at the end of the season, then what are these 6 bonus episodes that are going to start airing this weekend? Like,
I gotta like, feel
it'd be one thing
bad.
If the whispers were done at the mid-season mark, and then they're just like, okay, some like day in the life of Alexandria kind of thing. The, you know, like we're gonna go around to Seaside, and we're going around to this, and maybe Zeke will go back to the kingdom for an episode and try to like rekindle that. But like, if it's the whispers were what does that look like?
These episodes, I don't think they're gonna be any good. If you look at the timeline of the way this happened. It was not that they always had these planned and they were, you know, like, oh, six extra episodes that we made just out of the goodness of our hearts. No, coronavirus hit. All television and film production shut the fuck down and they were unable to schedule season 11 and get season 11 filmed and pre-production and all that stuff. So what they're doing is they're basically like scraping together the scraps off the cutting room floor is what is happening in my mind and piecing them into something they hope is coherent.
That's what
I just have no faith that these are going to be any good.
So here's, I haven't done any research on this because it's just perilous. Like if you guys are like, well, you're not doing any research in these episodes. Yeah, you're right. Because like I'm trying desperately to avoid spoilers. Because if you, I tried to do a little bit of reading. Now, if you guys want to like give me your interpretation of it, I would love to hear this, especially on our stereo show. I'd love to talk about this because I know the early report was that. Yeah. And I remember you and I thinking like, there's no way. Like, what the fuck does that even look like? You're going to go like weird back in time episodes. Like
it could be parts of 11 that they got filmed before coronavirus.
And that's
hit,
what I'm thinking like,
with leftover stuff from 10.
Or if they just got like some kind of like low budget and just got like one or two of the cast out in the woods of Georgia and just did some like connective tissue.
But the point of it is this was not planned. And so they didn't film anything for it. And they couldn't film anything for it because production was shut down. At best, they could film like an actor alone or something six feet away from everybody else. It's not going to be what you hope, I think.
This is the equivalent of the opening band trying to stretch things out because the main act is their tour bus got stuck in traffic. And boy, everybody wants Metallica, but they're stuck with Skid Row for the next hour and a half. Like.
So Skid Row playing covers of
they're going
ABBA
B-side. They're like, what's that stuff we were workshopping in the studio? Like, they're doing covers of ABBA. Absolutely, they would.
Absolutely,
they would. They'd do 45 minutes of crowd surfing. Like, it doesn't
you do
seem,
what you got to do.
But they're trying. I mean, this is just a naked attempt to keep the money pump primed
For sure,
so that spigot doesn't go dry when they finally. Although. I do wonder, you know, this is, I can stop me if you've never heard me criticize AMC before, but I do wonder if they would be better off building anticipation for like the real deal. Like I'm hungry for new fucking television, man, especially for shit that like, you know, like I'm familiar with and I want more of, but like what's going to make me have a better appetite, like warmed over bullshit or just another like, hey, you got another 9 months before the real deal comes back, build anticipation. They, you know, it just feels like there's a lot better ways to handle this than but also I don't know, maybe they got like a bomb, like maybe there's like, you know what, we actually had a really killer plot that we had mostly filmed but we just had to cut it because it just didn't work for time and it was like a painful cut, and you know, with a little bit of reshoots and some recutting, like we got 4.5 hours of good stuff here. Maybe. I guess we'll get the early reviews starting next week. By the way, don't give us spoilers, but I would love to know like what you guys think about, if you are brave enough to try these six bonus episodes, what the general vibe is, because I can't get that on Reddit, man. There's no way to just get the vibe without getting the spoilers. So
yeah, you'll get the end of season 10. All I know is that at every opportunity, AMC has chosen the money over the product being quality. That does not give me a lot of faith in what these episodes are going to be.
I think that's still the case, but with Angela Kang, they might have one of those like poverty stricken mothers that can, you know, like for Thanksgiving, take like one potato and two chicken wings and turn it into a feast, like, you know, and a can of green beans, like fucking miracle worker. Maybe she's got that like, you give me the scraps and I'll turn it into something edible, because
maybe we need a Cooking with Kang.
Scott Gimble left her a dumpster on fire and she made compelling television. So, I have a decent amount of faith in, I don't have any faith in AMC execs and Bean Counters, but I'm kind of building you know, Alpha Kang here. I got some faith in her. She's so calm, so strong.
Yeah. In the, among the chaos.
She smashes my head to her belly. I just feel safe and secure in her arms. So,
all right. Well, that's it for this episode.
Yeah.
We're of course going to be back. There's no feedback in this particular episode of the podcast, but we will be doing a feedback live show on Wednesday night. That's tomorrow night for people listening to it. Tuesday, the 20-something, 3rd. I don't know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. We're going to be on stereo.com/baldmove taking live questions from the audience. And that is kind of our feedback show each week. So
yeah, we will be taking also send long form stuff to watchingdead@baldmove.com because we'll be revisiting the written feedback at the mid-season break. But yeah, we are doing these things on Wednesday night and it's a lot of fun. And if you typically stop the podcast at the end of it, I know there's going to be an ad, a promo for the stereo thing where there's like a little 6-minute snippet from the conversation that we had with the viewer to give you an idea of like, you know, what it sounds like, how the show flows. But it's like, yeah, if you wonder how to get feedback, it's as easy as talking into your phone. You know, hold a button and you talk a phone, you let it go and we get it. And we're talking to you. So it's a pretty cool thing. Stereo.com/baldmove. Check out the snippet after show. And also, I guess if you're in the Watching Dead feed, you actually got the full episode because we're releasing that as a dedicated feedback episode too.
Yep.
So, I hope to see a lot of people here on Wednesday night. And until next time, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.